Welcome to the Beyond Addiction and Trauma, the Family Recovery Podcast. Always happy when you sign in and kind of listen or watch, whichever you do. My guest today is Dr. Letitia Bader. Dr. Bader and I have been friends for a long time. We've worked together in various treatment centers, and today she the last several years, she has been the chief clinical officer at Denver Women's Treatment Center. And today's podcast is about gender and gender issues in addiction treatment, both for clients and for families, and really beginning to look at what are the specific needs of men and women. We're going to primarily focus on women's treatment today. What are the recovery needs for the client, but also their family members in terms of men and women, and how recovery might look a little different for both groups. As you know, you can watch this video on my YouTube channel, Michael Barnes, PhD, LAC, LPC. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, and you can pick up my book, When the Solution Becomes the Problem, Helping Families Struggling with Addiction and Trauma, on my website, drmikebarnes.com. And I have paperback versions, I have electronic versions there. And so, again, thanks for your interest, and please enjoy the podcast. Thanks. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Beyond Addiction and Trauma, the Family Recovery Podcast. And my guest today is one of my dear friends, Dr. Letitia Bader. We've worked together. We have, theorized together. We've big thought meetinged together, which is a whole nother story about the big thought meetings that we used to do. And she is. I really wanted Letitia on, Dr. Bader, on this podcast early in the process to talk about gender, to talk about women in treatment. And I'm not talking just about women clients in treatment. I'm talking about family members, partners, parents, and the special struggles that many women have as they move into recovery. Again, whether it's recovery from their addiction, whether it's recovery from just family recovery. And so I think it's as important for men to listen to this as it is for women. So if you're a guy,
Amen. Amen.
if you're a guy and you're thinking, oh man, this is about women,
Don't turn it off.
I'm going to turn it off. So don't do it. And so to understand that there really are differences, and that there really are things that the more you know, the easier it will be to navigate the struggles of early recovery into long-term recovery.
100%.
Okay, good. We're on the always on the same page. And so, would you do a true introduction of yourself for everyone?
He said, and you lob it like that to me because he knows that I can go for 3 hours and not even say my name. So hello, I'm Dr. Letitia Bader. I currently hold a position. I'm a chief clinical officer for women's recovery. Of that one, I could not be more proud of it. I have I would say a non-linear career path. So I'm actually trained as a sports psychologist, and that is where I started my path. So I'm a licensed psychologist and then a licensed addictions counselor. You'll laugh about that one, how I got here, of course. And then a CMPC. I'm a certified mental performance consultant. And that lets me have one half in the recovery world and the other half in the athletics and elite performers. And so I really do. I'm the chief clinical officer for women's recovery, and they love me enough to give me a little bit of room. And then I get to work with Major League Baseball. I'm a consultant for them. I get to talk with teams and have a private practice and get to do all kinds of stuff. Consult for USA Cycling and out there is because kind of this. And the joke is, don't leave, because that's my human being experience, y'all. Even in conferences, Barnes, you'll laugh on this one, right? It's like I'm on the roster, and as soon as you put gender, and it's like half of the room leaves. I've actually bribed people to stay to listen because when we're fighting a chronic disease, I love turning anything on its head to get a different perspective. And you say that, right? It's like if you walk
Me
into
too.
an AA meeting, right? Like walk out and go to an ACOA meeting, like adult children's, and then turn around and walk out and go to an Al-Anon meeting and turn around and walk out. Why? Is because if you get a different perspective on the same disease, you'll actually understand it. And so I love learning that, mostly for compassion, empathy, but just as a scientist. So don't leave, and we'll make it worth your while.
Yeah, it's such an interesting issue. And again, we have worked together at Cedar and,
We got to be across from the hall. That was a lot of brain power. I appreciate it that way.
that was probably the coolest set of years in my career.
Same
And
here.
because we had so many really big conversations about things like gender and how, what is truly trauma integrated therapy? And you can't be truly trauma integrated if you're not gender specific. And I say that with the greatest respect for treatment centers that just don't have the resources to, when I went to Foundry, we treated men and women. And very shortly thereafter,
Very shortly.
I made the decision that this isn't trauma. It's impossible to be as trauma integrated as we want to be in a house where men and women are interacting and all the gender stuff starts playing out. And so we very quickly became a men's only treatment program. And I believe that Denver Women's kind of came pretty closely around that same time. And it was a very appropriate mix of the two
They
programs.
when we when Holly Wilson in her brilliance like set us down and established it, it was 2017, February 2017. So it might have even be a precursor. But Barnes, we were the only one in the whole metro and one of only four in the whole state. And I'd say unfortunately, the numbers haven't changed too much. When we talk level of care, and that's why you say like there are certain times and places and specific situations or topics, treatments that we really do need that specificity, even just for a brief period of time. And we think about it, right? Is like you can go back to mixed groups and start to practice the things that you learn. But for many of us, we do need to kind of take those variables out in order to really get to the basis, the etiology, and the healing. And if y'all know me now for 5 minutes, if I like to do anything, I like to do it bigger, faster, harder, and stronger, and more efficiently. And that is what we learned scientifically, right? All of the research started to lean, and all of the thought leaders in the trauma integrated space really started to lean towards is that we do need to make it very gender specific, not necessarily gender separate all the time. So y'all can hear me, right? Is but gender specific. And I always joke about that for you trivia fans out there. The first title of the big book, if anybody knows it, insert here now. The first title of the big book was actually called 100 Men. And
Interesting,
you
right?
wonder why women have trouble sitting in the rooms, right? And there was women's stories that were in the first iteration, but she got kicked out because she got 13th stepped. So I say that often, like the he programs, you can't just throw an S on there and make it a she program. So they really do need to be integrated and informed for it. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah, when I do presentations on trauma integrated care, I always talk about that. The original addiction treatment was developed by men for men.
Amen.
And then we eventually got smart and started bringing women in for treatment and realizing that they needed it. But we tried to fit a square peg into a round hole from a gender perspective and from a real specific needs perspective, treatment needs. And then we went to kind of, we'll give you a women's group and that'll do it. And until now, many iterations later, we're really truly
Truly.
treating from a gender very specific way and gender responsive way,
Thank
understanding.
you. Yep.
Yeah. So we hadn't talked about this, but I think it's a good thing. I always like to think about our listeners and what are some questions that when listeners are looking for a treatment center for their daughter or their partner or whomever it is that
that, like, what should they ask a treatment center to get a sense of just how gender responsive it is?
Fabulous. Well, I put some stats in there, right? So just know that something like women do take on the patterns of their partners. Research lets us know that, right? So if you're not looking for a treatment center now for your beloved, you might later on. Is that women make it to treatment about 6.2 years later on average than their male counterparts. And so it's not one of the things that when we're sort of looking for treatment, right, is that we sort of get to shop around and go, oh my gosh, there's so this is like in, you know, in the department stores, there's so much selection. There's often not. However, when you're on the phone call, right, asking for that, it really is going to be about the topics. So even in the state of Colorado, is that women specific programs actually have to add more to their curriculum. We talk about parenting, we talk about trauma, we talk about personal safety, nutrition and health, right? And so those are the questions, the things that really do make the whole person when it comes to gender, informed and specific care. So we need to be able to talk about, I call it parenting, but I say more peopling, right? So you really need to have a program that does base, that's relational and will is ready to talk about attachment issues and ready to talk about, honestly, like wounds of your mother, how to be a mother, and then like how to be a assertive woman after that. And so stages of life as well is to make sure that your treatment center is really kind of focusing on that. And I know it sounds kitschy and you didn't pay me for it, but it's got to be about family systems. And I'm going to tell you my little funny why. He knows it. But when we were doing, when I was first kind of researching of why, I have to be honest, I had to work through a little bit of a resentment, right? Because as soon as good people grab great treatment centers and they're trauma integrated, they make them gender specific. And guess where the women go? We lose a treatment center, right? Or we lose access to care. And so what we know is that when women's treatment needs to be relational, if you put a bunch of men together, research does let us know it makes a military. If you put a bunch of women together, it actually makes a family. And so the joke is from day one at Women's Recovery, from when you walk in the door, we're actually already doing family care. We're doing systems work. Men do report talk, REPORT, right? And women do rapport talk, RAPPORT. And when we get to it, that's what I want you to be looking for. When you're coming up with that phone call of where do I get my loved one treatment, please make sure that it has a focus on that family system and that they really are willing to kind of explore what that looks like. We think about that trauma informed. And not, oh, ugh, that trauma informed is the marketing one that got going, right? But like trauma integrated, which means that they're going to be body-based, right? That they're going to understand the somatic, the nervous system. And that they're really going to tie those top down, we need those skill sets, and the bottom up. And if you are on a call and the marketing person doesn't know what that means, if they don't know what the word somatic means, if they don't understand top down, bottom up, like you can go ahead and hang up because they're probably going to try to put just like a cognitive behavioral psychoeducation program to your beloved. And that won't work for us. It's experiential. It is narrative work. It is body work, right? It is a lot of addressing co-occurring. Like that's not a catchphrase we need to use. Yes,
Absolutely.
it's got to be integrated from the front door to the back door for that.
So often when I'm going around the country and speaking and stuff, and I'll talk about trauma integrated work, and I'll ask programs, are you trauma integrated? Like, tell me about your trauma integrated program. And they'll say, like, well, we have an EMDR therapist. And I think okay, good. What else? Like, and so the point you're making that I think is so important is it's not just telling the trauma story and working on it.
Probably not even that. We're not doing
No.
no foundation. No.
So tell me how you do it. Just so that again,
No, I gotta
I
tell
want our
like,
listeners to be able to say, look, I finally understand what that means.
and it really, somebody came in for a tour like when we first opened, and they saw like our grounding and resourcing restock like our baskets in the group room. And somebody was like, "Oh, that's fun. You do play therapy here." It was like Play-Dohs and the putty. And I was like, "What? Oh my gosh, no." It literally is like we started our last group and we did a vagus nerve exercise, like a stretch, right? And that you can literally stretch and ground the vagus nerve. We do not continue group until we know people are grounded and resourced. Because if not, welcome. That makes another power dynamic, right? That you're just bulldozing people with information while their brains are offline. That experiential work and really holding space for the body. And I know that it's not as kitschy, right, as you make it sound, but it's a way that the treatment is paced and then the way that it's delivered. And so all of our clinicians, I say it, they don't have a cool term. I'm trying to coin it. Maybe I'm going to coin it here and then maybe you can help me make it famous.
Okay.
Is right, we were co-occurring specialists when we knew that mental health and substance use went together. And then we're trauma integrated, but I was like, but we're triple trained. So most of us hold like a mental health license. We hold some kind of addiction license or certification. And then I would say 92% of us that are walking the halls at Women's Recovery have that additional third. And it's not just like I know trauma, it is that I know the solutions to help move the body through trauma. And whether that is, car model, right? Whether that's moving your marbles, if you will, or EMDR or somatic experiencing or even IFS, right? Systems work when we get it, and to really make that part work. That's the triple trained. And so you'll see a higher level caliber treatment center come with that knowledge and it'll be bled throughout. Even like we offer TMS and we say that right, like chronic depression, but we understand that the base of the brain has to be on board before you can participate. So
Well,
that to me is the hallmark.
yeah, I mean, if you're in a state of high anxiety and autonomic nervous system dysregulation, the prefrontal cortex goes offline and talk therapy really doesn't work. And a therapist that doesn't know how to use that, go from top down to bottom up, which is grounding. And like that should just be a normal procedure for an addiction counselor today.
Yeah, I did.
But
Thank
it's not.
you. No, I'm laughing totally. Barnes, I did not think I would self-disclose, but I would love to share a you and I moment in the hallway. But you'll have to know this is Barnes, right? Barnes is coming. He is forefront, right? Understanding trauma, like moving it into the treatment space, everything. I come on board, if you will. I'm from a very cognitive-based training structure. That's me and my PhD and my ivory tower. Right. I'm sports psych, but we're still like CBT and we're going to think our way out of it and everything like that. Mindfulness is getting into my sports training. But as I start to train with you, right, is that we start to do all of this trauma integrated work and everything. And by this time, I'm highly resentful. And I am reading, y'all, if you know me, like 5 minutes, a little passive aggressive in it. And within five, like 80 articles, Barnes, I'm reading 80 articles to try to disprove you and Stephanie Covington and Dan Griffith, like anybody that's coming in the halls, right? And introducing this sort of style of treatment. And then I come in and I was like, Barnes, and y'all, this is real. Like, if we could reenact it, this is me, right? I've like listened to Brené Brown on the highway, I'm stuck on Denver highways. And I come to work and I'm like, Barnes, I'm trying to like talk to an amygdala, and you lovingly go, yes. And for those of y'all that are not watching, you can hear it in my voice. And I said, well, that's scientifically impossible. It's the neurobiology is like, it's not, that doesn't work. And you go, yes. And I said, so I went to school for a really long time, and like, that's what I have on board, and that's what I know how to do. And my interventions are pretty pointless. And you go, yes. And I probably kicked a door and stormed off and tried to quit and then came back. And I was like, okay, what am I supposed to do with the five senses? And it really was where trauma integrated care is really holding space for the brain to get back online, like, and to not re-traumatize, right? It's not add to this chiasmal, this systems trauma that most of us are living in. And y'all, and that's what I'll tie it in, especially family. Y'all, listen, family, you're living with this chronic disease model that makes you jump when your dryer, when your new electronic dryer goes off, because it's the sound of your phone, right? Going off at 3 o'clock in the morning. Your bodies are rewired for, was it the morphogenic? It's my favorite when you say the morphogenic rules, the rules that start to play out when you are in crisis. And now your body is rewired to stay in crisis 24/7, 365, however long you've dealt this. And y'all, if your loved one has battled this disease for 6 months, a year, 10 years, you are a ninja for these responses. I mean, I have to be honest, you're probably more well trained than our first responders. And your bodies are rewired. And that's what I started to learn was, well, if we can't adjust the rewiring, it really doesn't matter what book you read. It doesn't really matter, what great mantra slogan you have written on a sticker on your Nalgene bottle or something. It's like if your brain's offline, it's kind of fruitless. And so, y'all, that was there. And I worked my resentment steps forward and everything. And then I settled in, became kind of triple trained, the same.
It's
So that
interesting. Those morphogenic rules that we create during crisis
love them.
are not intended to be the rules long standing. They're
No, they're
to
supposed
get
to
us
be
through the
rules.
crisis, right? But the longer we continue to play them out, they become hardwired into the new normal. And I ask families all the time, how long does it take when your loved one walks in the front door of the house to identify if they're intoxicated? And the answer is 2 seconds. And then I said, well, let's just imagine your loved one's been sober for a year and a half, 2 years, and you haven't seen them in a while. And they're doing great. They're making good progress. And you haven't seen them for a while. And they walk in the door, and how long before you think, I better check to make sure they're still sober? And the average answer is, and this is with thousands of families that I've asked, yeah, probably 2 seconds. And that's the price we pay for that morphogenic or that crisis-based learning that we do. And
I love
that's where
that.
and that's why I really wanted to talk not just about female clients, but also moms and partners and people, family members, that they have as much work to do in that area. I call it the parallel
Rewire our
process, right?
body. Yeah. I did. I started to learn with all of the training that we did with trauma. I learned in that you bring sensory information every 3 to 5 milliseconds. And so that the brain is trying to process that. And this actually came from a family session just a couple weeks back. We do family workshop at Women's Recovery. So if y'all know me too, I managed a professionals program and we had a whole family department and I was overheard going, oh, families are not my department. That's when I was in a lot of denial about how much this is a systems disease. So I run the family workshop. I love it. It's well integrated into our care. And much like we're still offering that best practice care, whether, oh, that's another thing. When you're calling up, to make sure that a program has a family component to it and not just like an afterthought, but like from the front door, right? And it's not that if they revoke all the ROIs and everything like that, but it really is like we have an open family group. You don't even have to come. That's on Wednesday. We host it. You don't even have to have a person in treatment. Just come. It's a support group. It's loved ones, right? Just come and get it and settle in and learn some lessons. And then every other Friday we have where the families come in with the clients. Make sure that that's there. But the story in a workshop a while back was, a sober work in a program, great one. It was a gentleman, right? And then a wife, partner is, she had forgotten that he had a dental appointment, during the middle of the day. And so had come into the house and started talking and she went straight at him and looked at his eyes and everything like that. The numbing work, the Novocaine hadn't worn off. She'd picked up a little bit of a slur. And her whole body lit up because they had done work, right? She's like at the counter, so they talked about it. She was going to put her hands on the cold counter if anything ever came up like that. And she goes, the story I'm telling myself is that you got drunk in the middle of the day and you're trying to hide it. And he goes, I don't like, and he goes, oh my God, I went to the dentist. And they had a giggle right after it, but with both partners like not doing that work, right? That would have just started. And I love, did you hear the permission, the story I'm telling myself versus that first accusatory reaction that families get used to? You're drunk, you're high.
You're drinking, and
You're drunk, you're high. What's going on?
yeah,
So they
I
had both
love.
done their work.
Well, and I love the movement to stories and to narratives, and so your family program is as trauma integrated as your treatment program, which we all know that that is my belief as well. And so that's the other question I would ask is your family program, do you have a family program? And like
We have
how
a
does it
workshop.
address, how does it
Yeah.
address family trauma, not just client trauma?
And so we do that. It really is, when we think about it, it really is the systems of care. And this is my one plug, especially when we're still kind of talking on this long, my really long ass answer for when we're evaluating programs is women don't often necessarily have that privilege, maybe, of going to inpatient care. We'll say that is when I was working in inpatient, we were always kind of asking, where are all the women? Where are all the women? Research does let us know that we get to treatment later. So our disease stays alive and potentially progresses more so than our male counterparts. But it really is the application of that level of care. And so inpatient, we often don't have the privilege to step out of our lives for 30 or 60 or 90 days, because that was the model that was made. Right? A person leaves, the household continues, right? The two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, everything's sort of taken care of. You get well and you come back and you reintegrate into the system. That was often a privilege for males at the time. And so, like, this IOP level of care is often where we're finding it's a really effective early intervention, that PHP IOP for women. So, take care of the two-leggeds, take care of the four-leggeds, do that and get well. And then we can still kind of function within our lives. Very effective level of care. That's why I'm there, for that.
Well, most treatment centers admit 7 men to every woman that they admit. And so we were talking earlier about where are all the women? And
We're still functioning, Mark. We're still functioning.
what did, like, say what you told me. That I think that that's really important for people to understand that it's not denial. It's not, I mean,
No.
there's a reason women don't go to treatment.
There are many, the access to care is a lot of it. And so they actually have a lot of research for that, of like the barriers to care for women. And it really is between management of domestic engineering, right? Of like management of the household, who pays the check. If you think about it, if you and I are partnered, right? And potentially you are part of my illness, I'm now maybe asking you for our shared finances. Is it if we're both employed, right? Or if one of us works and the other one doesn't? I think about it that way, right? Welcome to this generation. Even if we're one household income, if I'm the breadwinner, what's going to happen for you if I step out and take care of myself and go to treatment, right? If you're the breadwinner, then I'm asking for our money, your money, our money, right? Like, and so. Finances become a concern, a barrier for it. Household managing the family and the home and just attendance. But I'm gonna put my little kitschy moment in here. I used to joke all the time, is like possession is 9/10 of the law. I used to work in corrections too. But if you are like in the bed, in the house, everything, you're in the relationship. And then we had our medical Dr. Martin. She was fabulous. Again, it's not a stat that you can research. And Dr. Patty Pade said the same, as they would quote this kind of 90-10 rule. And I was like, what's that? And they would used to say, like 90% of the time when a man goes to treatment, a woman stays in the relationship, right? Even if it's dysfunctional, even if it's unhealthy, maybe, right? It's even abusive at the time, right? They're not working it out. Or we're ridiculously loyal and here we are, right? Like, you get well, I got it. But then they would say 90% of the time when a woman goes to treatment, a man would leave. And I know we're talking in the binary and kind of the heteronormative, but those rules translate often. Is that when a woman stops, if you will, to take care of herself and to get well, often a lot of the relationships she's trying to hold on to dissolve and leave. And it's just one of the fears that happens. It's a barrier to care of getting us in to treatment, is that we are worried about the relationship networks that we have around us. So it's kind of one of those concerns. And so our the same family systems, our system, our stakeholders, our champions, like they've got to be in it with us. Women get well, our ego development actually happens within community. And so when we get well, we actually honestly don't do it as effectively if you sort of send us off to treatment and bring us back to reintegrate. And so actually, if we can do it within our community, we actually have a better chance of developing a much more successful outcome for care.
So clinically, what are some of the things that would be important for families to know that their daughters, partners, the females in their lives are going to be needing to focus on, both in treatment and in aftercare, that may be different than what men would need to address?
We really do. And so to me, that's kind of the trauma integrated part is that w to start to make the system around us, right? It's even the household, everything is the trauma informed, like we got, and then trauma integrated. So we're gonna start to change the house if we need to by our emotional reactions, maybe even some of the rules and rituals that we do, and so to try to break some of those morphogenic rules, right? We're not in crisis. We're gonna be okay. A lot of autonomy and empowerment. Most of us really don't necessarily know what those words mean. And so we have a part in our family workshop. We call it the language of recovery. And we sit and we define words so that we use them well. Like boundaries is not a weapon, it's not a weaponized word. Even like that, evoke the stories I'm telling myself. We get a much better common language. And that's when you can see like the whole system's getting well, not just like, what do y'all call it? The identified patient. Right, because they're not coming home just using jargon. And so that's what actually we notice is that if the system can start to understand those principles of recovery, is that we can, even just the language, is that
Gotcha.
we can, and you're going through your program, I'm going through my program, right? And so that we can start to get to those more, what, and the big book says a position of neutrality, right? For in the trauma world, we call it grounded and centered, right? For that, like resourced. The yoga even has equanimity, right? Like the window of tolerance. We're all talking about the same thing that if we can get our bodies and our brains sort of connected again. And that's why when we reintegrate, that's what we're hoping to do. So we kind of look at the home, we look at relationships, we look at even parenting practices, right? Even some of those like a love and logic we teach like the, we all kind of nod, but it really is where I didn't come from that household. We get, I mean, you and I, we make eye contact, and listeners, if you the list, we didn't come from those households. And it's not a softer style of parenting, it's a more empowered part of parenting. So even like that love and logic kind of practice. But it's just peopling, it's just good peopling to move from reactions to responses. Because it brings our bodies and our brains with it. So that's, we really do make sure that we talk nutrition, like we talk nutrition and sleep and executive functioning. We say that ad nauseum at Women's Recovery. And if y'all know that, like it's just planning, prioritization. Like, do you have kind of the daily bits of life down so that it doesn't feel as chaotic? So that we're moving our environment back down to a more integrated or a more, a less chaotic environment. And we say that, right? So that's like the person, the process, right? And then the community. And am I in relationships that help me maintain my regulation? Am I in a physical home? Do I have a home? How is it managed? Is my nutrition on board? Is my like body, everything from the ground up?
Can you talk a little bit about just gender socialization and some of the patterns that, I was talking to a colleague who's an individual trauma therapist, and he and I have spoken to on the same at the same, presentations and stuff. And I said, it's funny, I've never heard you say the word family once. And he said, why would I? And I said, every one of your clients is part of a family, and you're helping them to change. And he says, well, I always thought that their families would be just really grateful that they were getting better. And I said, so that wife that through gender socialization has never really pushed back and said no to you on anything suddenly has a voice and is empowered.
Oh, woo.
And you're just going to love every second of being told no now for the first time. And it never struck him that in recovery, women are empowered and that they are going to interact differently. So, like, how would you describe that? And how can families begin to recognize that they're going to have an opinion?
They're gonna, and Barnes, this is what I love about the gender things that are said in women's recovery that are not said in other places. The rules and boundaries for the bedroom are gonna change. When you say a voice, right? I think in that one, right, you might be narrating something that might happen in the kitchen. Watch a woman, right, that is getting well and now is like, nope, no thank you. Nope. And they're sober, right? So I'm not impaired when we're having sex, right? The thing is, like, a lot of those things where boundaries could have been violated, now you're going to hear the no. And that is very homeo, you are like mafia style messing with homeostasis. And just like all the rules say, that is not going to fly with a lot of partners. One way or the other, I love, even if it's like, like they're coming to the foundry, right? And they're coming back. Is a woman that's getting well, who's not in treatment, who's maybe like the family program, she's also going to be like, no, we don't do that anymore. You don't get to speak that way. You're doing some dishes, right? We're dividing up the domestic responsibilities. And so it is that part is like in every bit of the household and in every bit of communication, homeostasis is changing. And so it really is that part where I love it when the system gets well, right? Whoever our family of choice is, and that's we're really big on that part as well. It's like that family of choice that I've made is sort of everybody kind of needs to get to know the new norms. But it's like what family 4.0 is we're not going to go back to the old ways because most of them weren't very functional. And I say that like no joke, even the kids and the dogs. Like, because if the four-leggeds were used to you doing everything for them, right? Or passing out on the couch, and now you're not, they're readjusting. And so it really goes through all of the levels of the system, right? And it'll change. I mean, it changes holiday rules. It changes. I laugh even in our household. It took a while to say, like alcohol's not a gift that you give. You don't put a bow on a bottle of alcohol. And in my culture, that's looked at very strange. And so it's just those parts that you're readjusting, realigning to these new values of recovery, of getting well. And now this goes for more than just drink. Like if you think about the changes like for mental health, right? Or even trauma, I think about that, just that extra space. My partner's attuned now, right? We talk about it a lot, is that I called it when we first started to really understand what disassociation was. And no, this is like you don't have to, shame and trauma, right? Light up the exact same parts of the brain. And so even these rules, these skills that we're using, you don't have to be qualified for your PTSD diagnosis. We talked about that to learn these skills and to learn this approach to getting well, because it is a universal experience. And so it's just those little moments, right, where you'll see someone shame spiral or you'll see someone disassociate, and now you can actually be helpful. So, to not quote your book, like when the solution becomes the problem, no, is that you offer them like this space to use their grounding instead of bulldozing them through that moment. And so that's when we talk about it. It really is that part. I love that your colleague, we have trauma integrated. I do this work. This is my not secret secret. I teach trauma integrated practices to coaches. And I really try to coach people out of saying that teams are families. Because I was like, whoa, what if we're just coworkers? Because that might be easier. So we don't recapitulate things. But to me, that's how us as a society really could benefit us as a system, is that even coaches can learn some trauma integrated skills or trauma informed skills. And just have a better chance of being successful and communicating more effectively, and to do it that way. Because if we can regulate from the ground up, we're just much more successful human beings.
I mean, it is interesting that sports teams, while not families, they do organize like
Sure.
families. They have
Oh,
rules and roles and routines and boundaries and rituals of celebration. And
Oh, don't we ever? Heavens forbid. Yes.
And so I think
Rituals of grief and loss. We have the whole gamut.
And so to be able to teach coaches from a systems viewpoint and
Yeah.
from and think of all the trauma that happens in athletics and
So much.
injuries and loss. And so
I say to Barnes, if you'll humor me, is like I also never get off a call and don't educate about one biological difference, if that's okay too.
sure.
One of the things that I've heard in the hallways a lot of the times now is to say that substances, right? Substances are gender inclusive. I love it, but they're not gender neutral. And if I can stop you with that curiosity already, then I know that it's worth the next talk. Is we've learned that through science, but I'm going to tell you, since women only hold 8% of the substance use research literature, it's little known facts. Because our bodies have so much variability in it, we're terrible test subjects, if you will.
Right.
That's why most of the diet plans that you see are made for middle-aged men, right? Like the keto diet and the Mediterranean diet is, but it's a telescoping effect. And so when it's studied, it's actually proven itself correct each and every time. And so the telescoping effect is just this, is that women will start with lower amounts of substance use, but we progress in a more escalated fashion, because my body can actually build up more tolerance than your male body. I can make miracles, so I can tolerate a lot of impacts and a lot of physiological hits to it. But if you put us, like if you and I went one for one, right? If y'all, I don't know, put a buttload of drugs in between us, right? And come back in a year, is it's a 2-to-1 ratio for my body. So it will be twice as hard biologically. Right. And then I'll use for different reasons. But I will, in essence, if you will, be sicker than you as we come back. I'm also using for mood management and mood regulation and stress management, while men often use for more risk taking or kind of that escape factor. But we talk about it that way. And even with cannabis, alcohol and nicotine are water soluble drugs. And cannabis is a fat soluble drug, a lipophilic drug. So even that is twice as hard on my body, of the use of it and even the withdrawal of it. And so it's something like that where if we think all things are sort of created equal, we're not. And so women actually will come in. We usually hold about 3.6, this is women's recovery stats, about 3.6 on average diagnoses. So a mental health diagnosis, some kind of a substance, and usually a trauma diagnosis as well. And we come in on about 4.2 medications per person. And men don't come in as sick, if you will, as women to treatment. Again, with that additional delay of getting there. And then when we present, that telescoping effect has already had its way with us as well. And that's even before hormone changes. So when we use at different ages as well, the impact is that much greater.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people just don't think about, that there are truly biological
Truly
differences
biological differences.
that are going to change the trajectory of treatment and the trajectory of recovery. And so I had David Whitesock on. I don't know if you know David or not, but he's with a company called Commonly Well, and he's an expert in recovery culture.
Oh, yep.
And so I've known him for a long time, and we were talking about recovery capital isn't just something for someone in recovery, but he has two measures. One is what he calls the resilience scale, for family members and for others who don't struggle. And so, how does the view of recovery capital differ from a gender perspective? I mean, what are the three areas are professional, social and cultural, or personal, social and cultural. How would you say, and why I'm thinking about this is because so often when I talk to families and I make this differentiation between abstinence, sobriety, and what recovery looks like. And there are a lot of people who believe, recovery is so individual that there's no way to measure it. I don't agree with that. I think there are certain patterns that are pretty consistent with people who are in recovery. But how might they be different for women? Like the striving for everything from career to I hadn't even thought about that question until just the second.
I say this, so you're going to hear me be on both sides of the fence. There's some things that are so universally human that they will not be different. That won't change by age, right, or by gender. So, if you will, professional success, if you're as a high schooler, means I'm going to get this kind of a grade on a report, right, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to achieve this on a sport team, versus like I'm going to be a C-class level executive by the time I'm 30. We can make that age appropriate, and so some of these don't change. And so you even heard me, right? Is that if I've a domestic engineer, I'm not a housewife, is if I really am saying, what is my function as a professional? I pick my profession, right? If I'm a singer, if I'm an artist, if I'm something, and I'm going to come up with some kind of recovery capital for what is makes me successful. And that's where you'll hear us again. We say executive functioning. Because it literally is executive level functioning. Am I planning and prioritizing and doing that? It might not be as tangible as I land this job, right? Or I do this. But for most women right now that come through, there are professional goals that are involved. There are family goals. I love it. We do a lot of same abstinence goals and non-abstinence goals. And that's where we get in that whole person wheel for that recovery capital. And that's a pretty common thing that we speak of as well. I haven't had time to sit with him, so that sounds like a cool thing. But we used all of the same
Sure.
recovery capital started when you and I were at Cedar. And I'm like, oh, thank yes. And y'all, if y'all don't know that, the Europeans defined it well before we did, is that when you come into treatment, they actually will set it somewhere in the like in 78% of the goals that are set within treatment are sort of non-abstinence goals. And it's like it's a lot more about physical wellness and spiritual wellness, right? And mental wellness than just not drinking for that reason. And
Yeah,
so
I was gonna say that's one of David's things is we spend way too much time about don't drink rather than what are the things that give you joy in life and what are the things that make you feel good about yourself in life. And
it's trout. And Barnes, this is you and me. Like we know this is to tend to measure recovery or to measure wellness. It's often that you're measuring that things aren't happening.
right.
So it's how many months you don't go to the emergency department. It's how many fights you aren't in the house. It's that level. It's almost like if you could measure it more for like a cortisol level. Is that like the lower it goes, the better I am? And that's actually the goals that we put in our treatment plans, that interpersonal kind of conflict, right? And how well am I doing? And that's a lot more the executive functioning. Am I getting on time? Am I able to plan and prioritize? Am I cognitively feeling refreshed? Have I picked up a new hobby, right? Like, am I getting back to the creative things that made me me? Am I getting back to like a, we have a, professional cyclist, like when have you gotten on the bike again? When is it going well? Those are the goals. That's the recovery capital, I think, that we measure. And again, what you plug and play for that may be based on gender, but it really is, are my peopling skills doing better? So does that make parenting less tension filled? Are we doing it?
Yeah, I was just thinking, and for anyone who's listening who wants a deeper dive into recovery capital, check out the podcast with David Weitzhoc.
So
He,
good.
you know, Dave, he's such a good guy and such a smart guy. He explains it so beautifully. so let's take a few minutes kind of towards the end and say there's difference. I think there's a big difference being the mom of a client than the dad of a client. At least in my experience in working with both. And so what do you think are the things that moms and partners that they really need that in their own recovery that might be actually gender maybe driven or gender socialization driven that
We, Barnes, you said it, and you can, if you're only listening, you can't see me smile. We spend time talking about like the woman rules, right? That's the Griffin when we get back into it. And it really is, what are the societal expectations for you in this moment, in this role? And where do they come from? And are you willing to again play by them? And so it really is that in recovery, we get to step back, right? Identify what's been hitting the gas on this system. Because at chronic disease management, when you talk about it, right, we are not naive to think that there's actually some things in the environment that might be keeping people sick, right? We watch them get sick when we can get to a place of acceptance, right, and accountability in our own integrity, we can know that we were probably engaging in some enabling behaviors as we went through for whatever reason, usually out of love, mostly out of fear when we really get down to it. And so it is that part where when somebody that I love is getting well, my identity will change as well. My role will change. And so it's going to be to kind of explore what those woman rules are. What are the mom rules? Because and this goes different by culture, right? Definitely by different generation. I think if we cut across this way, we were talking Catholic stuff before, right? But like you pick a dogma, you pick a religion, you pick a region. And you, as a woman, as a mom, as a partner, as a daughter, are supposed to, should act a certain way. And if the person that you love gets sick, you also have rules that go along with that. And so when we're all getting well, it really is a chance to kind of step back, see if we really want to play by those rules, see if those rules, those dysfunctional family rules, if you will, don't think, don't feel, don't talk, don't trust, don't grow, are helpful. And it's our chance to kind of realign our homeostasis. There's going to be an energy pull to it, much like the mafia. It will pull us back in because dynamics are bigger than we than us. But that doesn't mean that we don't have agency for them. So I always think about that as the getting well together doesn't have to look the same. We don't have to play by the same rules, but it is a process that we're all getting well. We're doing the work. And you know, my giggle is there's like the WORK work. And I think sometimes when, especially behind women's recovery doors, we do the WERK. So we got to work this stuff. And it is a constant. But that usually that process of healing helps a whole system and it helps usually communities. I was trying to find a stat that was like for my mic drop. I could only come up with this one in my stats, but like if a physician gets well, one physician gets well, they have a statistic that their career touches over 400,000 patients. And I was trying to find the stat that if a woman gets well, how many people are actually impacted? I don't have a percentage, so I just have the visualization. I wanted the listeners to think about it like a fondue fountain, right? Like if you get well, it will literally just like cover the rest of your world in wellness. And that's to me why systems kind of always has to be a part of it.
Sometimes I talk about it in the book in the last chapter, the idea that the family healing is really as much for the next generation as it is for the current generation. And so often, I think about John Rowland, who's a family psychiatrist and scholar at Northwestern University School of Medicine, and he has developed a family illness model that he talks about three generations impact our what he calls family health and illness schemas, and that those schemas impact how we show up as when an illness shows up, and that it is a really, if we can step back and see that systemic influence, that I mean everything you just said was like Rowland's thinking right along the way, and I think I think we're onto something. I think we're there. Now we have to. There's some, we're gonna have to change some old beliefs.
All beliefs and to go back to the community. This was across the hallway from you. Y'all were teaching epigenetics at the time, right? And I couldn't remember the word. I still can't to this day. So I laugh as I translated it. And I was like, so our DNA, right, when they go through trauma, is like it gets some goop on it. Is this what I couldn't remember because it was this multisyllabic word that I still to this day have a whole trouble like diving into the epigenetics. But that's when we learn, right, that the Holocaust, like we're six generations in, is that we are trauma, the impact of trauma holds generations. And I have to be honest, in my pro-con list of going to treatment myself, one of the last things that I said was, well, maybe I'll go to treatment for my grandmother. And somebody, at the time, I had not had a family myself, right? I hadn't had a child, and made that decision where it was one of the things where I'm like, and I'll go for the three generations I've never met after me. Is that if I can knock off a little bit of that trauma goop, is it would benefit and it would last for generations. And I think to me, and that's where you'll get a message I think that will resonate more potentially for women, is that intergenerational impact. Is that if I can do something, even just a small something, to get well now, it will literally clean up some of the historical trauma from the past, and it could actually impact generations I will never get to meet.
Oh yeah,
And
absolutely.
I was done. It was enough of that was starting to work it. Like, okay, let's do it. Why? And I'm like, well, for people I'll never get to meet is that they have a better chance to be well.
The term you're thinking of is methylation,
See?
and
Trauma goop.
the book It Didn't Start With You is a good place for people who are really interested in what is the impact of multi-generational trauma and how does it get passed from generation to generation. It's not just through parenting, but it is
No,
biological,
yeah,
psychological, and
take care.
social. And I remember I was doing a presentation and there's a guy who was asking me all these questions and he was really like he knew stuff I had no idea what he was talking about. And when it was over, I said to him, "How did I do?" And he said, "Yeah, you were good." He said, "You're a little obsolete in your information." I said, "Well, what's the newest thing?" And he said, "Epigenetics is the newest thing. It's going to change everything we do." And I said, "Wow, I better learn about that." And
And you did, and then you translated it.
I did,
And for y'all listeners, I laugh. What you just saw was the Barnes-Bader combo, because Barnes would have all of the multisyllabic words and the data, and have read the 80 articles, and then I was trying to translate it to the patients, and I'm like, I don't remember that word, and I don't trauma goop, y'all. Here we go, and that was what I loved about. And I point this out for the people that are listening. You are now in the personal professional world of the Bader Barnes combo. Here is it really is, and this is why y'all, I'll stick around for him and this work as long as possible. It's translating a lot of the science that may never get to the people that actually need it. That's what I love about what you are doing and what we are doing too, is that it really is integrated, innovative, like really trying to understand what's the most up-to-date approach to healing, and then getting it translated as sort of as fast as possible and as palatable as possible. Because I don't want to come home talking to my partner about the word I can't remember already in epigenetics, right? I'm like, that might not hit it. But when I said, hey, I'm going to tell you three stories about what happened to my grandmother, and you tell me that that doesn't have an impact. And then I can do something to help not continue that. I'm like, I'm down. So I love that. That's why I love our programs, honestly, is they really are whether it be technology, right, and the CMLA, we're taking those things that might be a little intimidating, and then translating them down to a very palatable understanding and a very practical practice. And it's just up to y'all, like, we'll just pick it up. Everybody deserves treatment, and that's your early intervention is a hallmark. If you are in an elevator with me, you know that that's what I stand for before we get off the elevator, is I don't know why we wait. I don't know why we choose to get so sick. Treatment's not offensive. Treatment is literally just going to a place and looking for additional solutions. And that was one of the things I know, it's like, right, stress with solutions is still just stress, and most of us can manage that. But stress with no solutions is trauma, and we don't need to stay there. So, As always, it's such a good time.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I always enjoy my conversations with
Same,
you. And,
same.
and I think about the big thoughts meetings that we used to have across the hall, and the idea was, we're constrained by our beliefs sometimes, and that we need a bunch of people from different, we would invite people from all departments to come
All
in and
departments.
solve a problem because the people who were trying to solve it were kind of stuck with the same thinking. And that's one of the things for the listener I would really urge is this idea of being curious to see maybe the story that we have is somewhat true, but not necessarily all true.
And I say it, if anybody was going to log off, because we talked about gender or women, and you stayed for the entire time, my challenge, I tell you then, is to go sit and learn whatever you want to learn about from a different perspective. I literally do that. I go to a men's one. I go to like a, I don't know, different, I went to like a Buddhist, how does Buddhism do like medical health? Is like, what religious doctrine don't I know about? And can I look at my concerns through those lenses? Einstein tells us that, right? Like, you cannot solve it with the same consciousness. So I think that's what I love about sitting and having those big thoughts or different perspective meetings is you're going to pick up on something, and y'all, it was just the backside of the problem and we didn't see it. And so if we can kind of shift perspective, not only does it help with compassion and empathy, but it really does evoke, like, stoke our curiosity. And I think we become just better people for that.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Bader, I, as always, appreciate
As
your time.
always.
And thank you for attending. And thanks to all of the folks that listened. And, more to come.
I love it.
I'm sure this won't be our last
Yeah, I hope not. And just with
podcast.
that same is the accessibility for treatment. Like, much like y'all's, the Foundry is like a Rolodex for if you need a resource and you're not in the same state or the same age or whatever, is call us, contact us, because we become a resource to you that way of just finding phone numbers, vetting treatment centers so that you don't have to be by yourself on the phone asking those questions. We've already done it for you. And so I say that is contact us for resources. We're the best phone book in the world, I think.
So, do you have a phone number and a
Oh,
website that you can give the?
yes. Well, I do it. So it's women's recovery, as in more than one. Don't forget to pluralize it. Women'srecovery.com, and you'll get there. And then, as you can tell, I wasn't ready. Our admissions number is 888-233-1553. So 888-233-1553. But I say the best way is just to go to women's recovery, more than one, .com, and you'll see us. And you'll notice the purple flare, because that is a color of royalty. And so we know that is like, that is how we deserve to get well, not in like IKEA built wobbly furniture, as an afterthought. Is even our treatment center and sober living and everything that we offer, really indicates that this is for us, and it is just, we are deserving, for this moment and this time. So.
Sounds great, and people will not regret calling you all.
No, not at all. If not, I laugh as you and I set this as a professional standard. I hope that it was to educate and entertain. So I hope that you at least got a couple chuckles out of it and got some new fun facts to share at parties. And
Right.
sometimes it's just fun to have the fun facts, but to get some conversation started.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, y'all.